Good afternoon, everyone. Yes, it's just after lunch. Seriously, welcome. I appreciate everyone joining us this afternoon. This session, we're trying something a little different that we haven't done before. So first, let me introduce myself. My name is Jay Schmelzer. I'm one of the directors of program management on the Visual Studio team at Microsoft. But for the purpose of our next 75 minutes, I'm here representing the .NET Foundation, specifically one of the board members for the foundation. If you aren't familiar, we launched the .NET Foundation at the Build Conference earlier this year with the intent and the desire to create a place where developers could engage on open source software development related to .NET. And we wanted to do something that was going to enable folks both just sort of in the general open source community, but also people with commercial interests around open source to come together and work on projects together, all related to improving the viability and the effectiveness and the productivity of the .NET kind of developer experience. One of the things when we were talking and forming the foundation, we spent some time talking to a number of the existing projects that were out there related to .NET and non-.NET, and asked them a lot of questions about, you know, what can we provide? What would be good to help you be successful? And one of the most common things we heard was, well, we really just need a lot of better visibility to what we're doing. Maybe dispel some myths about open source and get people to think about it in a current way. So what we wanted to do was take this session today and give the opportunity for four open source projects to come up and spend a little time and talk to you about their project, talk to you a little bit how they got to where they are. I would say that each of these projects is on the been successful side, so they've kind of crossed that chasm from being just a small project to being something that people are actively engaging with, and in a lot of cases commercial businesses are being built around. So they're going to share a little about their projects, talk to you a little bit about how, you know, you can get engaged in open source development, talk to you a little about kind of their experience and so forth. And so with that, what I'll do is I'll hand it off to our first project owner, Bertrand, to give you a little bit of his story.
When building open source, you want to ask yourself one big question. Why are you doing it? What's in it for you? I'm one of the people responsible for Orchard, which is a CMS, an open source CMS. And the competition for us is huge. WordPress has a 61% market share of all CMS. That is absolutely huge. It's more than 100 million websites out there. So if you're going to build a new CMS and you take WordPress as the thing to beat, you are going to be very miserable. This is not a good target. You have to find a goal that is not market share or something like that. On the other hand, if your goal is to produce awesome code and your goal is to create a great community, then that is a much more achievable, much more reasonable goal, and you might actually be able to pull it off. Also, if you do that, it's much more likely to make you happy, which is very important when you do open source. I have a few examples of members of the community who created great websites built on Orchard. AMC Theaters is a very high-profile website for us. Here's an example of a company that chose Orchard pretty early, actually, and built something fantastic with it. Their whole website is built on Orchard. It has a lot of business-critical contents, lots of visitors. It's all Orchard. And what is really wonderful is that those people actually contributed back some of what they've built when creating the website. Here is another website that could be a little surprising considering the product that is being promoted here, but there are actually quite a few teams at Microsoft that have been looking at Orchard and that have found out that it is a great platform to build public-facing websites. So that's one example of a Microsoft website built on Orchard. Here is another one that is really, really, really big website. How many of you are playing Halo in the room? Anybody? Oh, no gamers in the room? Oh, well, I play Halo. This is the official Halo website. So it's a very important website for Microsoft, a very, very large website, lots and lots of visitors. And they've built it on Orchard. And same as AMC Theaters, they have actually contributed back a lot of the things that they've built around Orchard in order to get this great website. The Fry website is a high-profile fashion website that has been built by a company called One Stop. It's a company from California that has adopted Orchard very early and that has rebuilt their whole e-commerce platform around Orchard, and now they are building a lot of high-quality websites such as this one. And again, that is another example of a company that has invested a lot of time and money into developing custom modules for their platform, and they have contributed back lots of those modules to the community. So this is really what you want to achieve with an open source project. You want to create a community where people can make a living out of what you're building and where they are going to contribute back to the community and be actors in the community rather than just users of your platform. I quite like this, this case study as well. The ASP.NET weblogs has migrated to Orchard a few months ago. That is a really big site in terms of volume of contents, number of visitors. I have another slide where I'll get into details about this. But you know, there are lots of weblogs blogs hosted on this platform. My blog is there. It's called Tales from the Evil Empire. So check it out. And there is also this red-shirted fellow who is blogging on that platform as well. You may know him. His name is Scott Guthrie. And I've heard that he's quite popular. So I'll talk more about the specifics of this migration. When we decided to build Orchard, there were a few design principles that we wanted to put into the platform. One of them is composition. We think that a CMS is an aggregate of modules that are contributing to building web pages. And being a collaborative platform like that, composition is very important. You need to be able to aggregate parts into contents in a way that they collaborate and they don't step on each other's toes. You have widgets, you have content items, you have navigation menus, and all of those must work together. Here, what you can see on the screen is an example of a product content type. And as you can see, it actually has a lot that is non-specific to a product. You have a title, you have a route, you have a body, you have media, images, you have taxonomies, tags, and so on. And all those actually have nothing that is specific to a product, but that you can reuse in your content types. The only thing that is specific to a product here is the product part. And this is just the part that you add to a content item to make it a product. So in theory, you could take any existing content type, put the product part on it, and make it a product, start selling that content item. So composition enables us to create very rich scenarios like that where you create new contents from reusable parts. After 5 years of developing the platform, between the built-in modules and the modules from our gallery, I think we cover pretty much all of the requirements of a modern CMS platform. And we are doing it in a way that is super extensible. Extensibility is really something that we wanted to bake into the platform from the start. Here, what you can see is an example, a very complex example, actually, of a workflow. That is a publication workflow. So this has been built by one of our users to manage the way that his content is getting validated in the site. So you can identify the various parts here. You can see that you have some loops sending reminders based on the time that has passed. You can pretty much do anything, and you can do that from reusable parts by just dragging and dropping tasks onto a design surface. So that is very, very powerful. And it is completely extensible. You can create your own tasks, and then you can compose them to create arbitrary workflows. If you wanted to build a new validation workflow into a CMS, there are really two ways you can go about this. You can try to think about everything and have something that is trying to be a monolithic validation platform, or you can do it this way. I think this is the right way to do it. So I said that I would get into the details of migrating weblogs.asp.net to Orchard. As I said, this is a very large site in terms of contents. It has 750 blogs. Those blogs total 75,000 posts and 250,000 comments. That is quite a lot of contents. And we're doing all that on a single Azure instance. So this is a really great showcase, both for Orchard and for Azure, because hosting such a large website on such a small configuration is actually quite impressive. So that single Azure instance has four websites. Each of the websites is able to handle up to 200 blogs. We have four Azure SQL databases. Same thing here. We are hosting up to 200 websites on one database. One blob storage account. That's for the media, mostly. And one Azure cache service. In terms of traffic, we get 17 terabytes out, which is quite considerable. We have 1.3 million views, 750,000 unique visitors, and 1.1 million visits every month. Average CPU usage for this, 20%. So that really gives us a lot of margin to handle large traffic when that happens. But on the average, this is pretty impressive. So does anybody want to take a guess about what this costs per month? Anybody? Okay, so that costs a little more than $500 per month. That is really not a lot for such a big website. And this is pretty impressive, we think. And it's working really, really well. We're very happy with the results. I, as a user, I'm very happy, at least. Very importantly, each of those blogs are complete sites. So it's not just that we are hosting 750 blogs on one Azure instance. It's that each of those are autonomous websites. So when I log into my website on the platform, I can actually change the theme, I can add widgets, I can change all the configuration. It's as if I had my own Orchard widgets for myself, and actually that's what it is. The origins of the project are, in the beginning, this was a simple group of people, a small subgroup of the ASP.NET team. This is how it started. But very, very fast, we made the project public, and we started taking contributions. We also chose a very, very liberal license, and that was a very deliberate choice, so that our users can use the platform to build open source and commercial products. So BSD is a great license for that. It's in the same category as MIT or Apache in that it enables that sort of thing. You can create a commercial product, sell it, and the license allows you to do that. So there are actually no limits about the types of projects that you can build with Orchard. So it did start as a project of the ASP.NET team, but one of the goals very fast was to transfer the ownership of the project to the community. And that's what we like to call Open++. It's not just a Microsoft product for which you can download the source code. That wouldn't be very interesting. It really is a community project. And now the part that Microsoft takes into the project is still very important. We have a full-time Microsoft employee working on the project, Sebastian Ross, who is a fantastic developer. But the project is really managed by the community. So we have elections every year from which we elect a steering committee of 5 people. And out of those 5 people, currently there is only one who is a Microsoft employee, that's Sebastian as well. And that steering committee elects a benevolent dictator. So there are lots of open source communities where there is a benevolent dictator who is for life. Usually that's the founder of the project. So we chose to actually elect that person. I was the dictator for 2 years, and after 2 years I decided to actually step down and let other people take that role. We have a weekly podcast. I think this is a very important tool that any open source project that has external contributors should mimic. We think that this is a very successful feature of the project. So every week we meet online. The meetings are public. Anybody can join, and you're all invited to join. I encourage you to do that. There are lots of fun, and that's where we take all the decisions concerning Orchard. So the governance is really completely open to the community. We also have a weekly triage meeting where we look at all the bugs that haven't been looked at yet, and we triage them. We weed out the ones that we don't want to take and validate the others. And we also do pull request evaluation at that time. And that's an interesting thing as well. I know that we were talking about that earlier. Lots of projects actually struggle with pull requests because of the quality of the pull requests or because of the frequency of them. But I think it's very important to handle that publicly. That also gives people the opportunity to come and defend their own pull requests publicly with the team. That's a very important image. This is part of the list of contributors for the project. And there are two things to notice here. Well, actually three. The first thing that you can notice here is that we have a very long tail of contributors, one-time or occasional contributors. So that's important. It means that the project is open about receiving contributions and takes external contributions. But you might notice that the first contributors have you have a core team of people who contribute a lot more than anybody else. And that is something that you want to build when you create an open source project. You want to have that core team of people who make the most contributions. Those are the relationships that you want to nurture. And of course, there is the third thing to notice here is that there is one up there, that's Sebastian. I've talked about him. He's making a lot more contributions than anybody else, but on the other hand, he's getting paid for it. So we really want people to get involved, as many people as possible. It's very easy to contribute. You can, if you don't know the project, visit our website. You'll see the information to join the weekly meetings. We have our repository, that's a Git repository on CodePlex. We have a gallery of modules and themes. So that is one easy way to start contributing. You can contribute your own modules. There is no control at the, there is no gate that's preventing you from doing that. Anybody can do it. You can also contribute bug fixes. You can contribute documentation. Those are all great ways of starting contributing, and in a way that is really easy. And then you can step up to more elaborate contributions. And we try to be very friendly with newcomers, so please visit us. I'm proud to say that there are quite a few people today who are making a living out of Orchard. I'm one of them, obviously. But those are all examples of companies that can help you build your Orchard project. So my company is the one on the bottom here, Decent Consulting. But all of those people are wonderful people that can help you with your Orchard projects. And with this, I'm going to give the mic to the next presenter. Thank you very much.
Thank you. So again, I think that was a really interesting and great story about how, you know, a project that actually started as an exercise by the, you know, the Microsoft team, the ASP.NET team, just sort of as an app building exercise, grew into a very vibrant open source project that now has a number of people really making a living on and around this project. So I appreciate you taking the time to share that with us. For the next project, I'd like to welcome up Marcus and talk to us a little about his experience.
Okay. Thank you. I'm Marcus Vint. I'm from a company called Composite. We reside in Copenhagen. We're a content management. We build a content management system like Orchard called Composite C1. We are from a more web shop background. So I'll try to, within 15 minutes, just quickly to answer the question. So what is Composite C1? We're an organization behind the product, 6 people working on it full time. So how do we get paid? Why we build open source? And also get into how you guys could get involved in the project. So first off, Composite C1 is open source. As a company, we started building CMS back in 1999 and did closed source content management software. And then we built in 2007, 2008, a new release, brand new CMS, and we open sourced that in 2010. We are currently, and have been pretty much since we released one of the top rated CMS at Coplex. We get very positive developer feedback, and that's one of a wide range of developers, both like the hardcore .NET developers, but also web developers. The reason to be for our software is basically to power company websites. And what is like driving us now since we went open source, it is a community. While we have an organization which is taking care of most of the development at the moment, it is very, very much the feedback and the marketing power also of open source which is helping us grow and get out there. So far, we've been installed 50,000 times. We've seen activity in 160 countries, and we've had community contributions also on translating our administrative UI. So now you can use our software in 10 different languages in the backend. So just to quickly, a quick idea of how could you work in our CMS. I'm gonna take a quick. Let's see if I can figure out how to start a video here. I can. So, of course, content management, the idea is people type in a URL, they end up on a website. A website is typically some content. We need to be able to manage that content. There should be something that takes care of structure, renders menu for us, can do searches and so on. So in this case, on our website, well, if we didn't have a job section, how could we go about adding a job section to the website? So let's try to look at a quick approach to do this. So focusing on web shops that needs to deliver features fast, we're not focusing on large-scale web applications that need to cater for thousands and thousands of concurrent users necessarily. So we try to build an environment where you can very quickly go ahead and, for instance, like here, go ahead and define data structures. We run our SQL Server or XML files. So you can migrate between the two. So this would be like an interface. You could go ahead and create data types. When you save this, we create a store. We'll generate an assembly for you so you have type safety. We'll generate some UI so people can start editing data. So you get this right off the box when you go ahead and create a data type in the system. Of course, you can go ahead and like replace bits of all of this if you need to. Customize the UI, write the code yourself, which we see behind. But by doing this, we get the UI. We also get the IntelliSense because we have code generation behind the scene. This is what we generate. And if you want to get that data in the system, well, you use Link. And if there's a SQL Server behind the curtain, this will be linked to SQL that gets fired onto the SQL Server. If you're running on XML, it will be in-memory queries. Works pretty well. So it's a very nice way if you go ahead and create custom data types, you basically have type safety when you work with it. So what we just saw was like a very quick way. We defined a data layer. We went ahead and we queried the data. So if we want to get some features onto a web page, show some HTML, there are different ways you can do that. We actually support both web, like user controls, web form technology, and Razor, and you can also have MVC controllers embedded. You can have it on the same page if you want to run it side by side. We are primarily focusing on Razor as a technology because it's a very nice mix of good markup control and access to .NET. So you go ahead and you create a web page. You can put some properties in there. There's a way to explain to the CMS how you can be configured. And then, so when we insert the function, I did a Razor file, I added to a folder, I added here. Now I get some UI. This is like the properties we defined on our Razor function. So that's a very fast way to get stuff in there. You saw how easy it was to get data. So it's very quick to get a feature like this. So we add it to the page. Same with publish, and this is like a fast way to create a feature and get it out there. And for a web shop, which needs to do, is competing and needs to deliver features for a smaller company website where it needs to be fast, well, this is like a very, very efficient and very, very nice way to do it. But you also have the freedom to go ahead and customize things at any level you'd like to. So very quick cross-section of how you could work in the system. A few other highlights. Again, we've tried to make a system that will make you guys fast. We will, when you install the system, get an option of different kind of starter sites, which will come typically with ASP.NET Razor, Less, and Bootstrap. Some nice designs, some pages set up already. We have a bunch of C1 packages. It's pretty equivalent to NuGet packages. It's features that you can very easily install onto the site. You can do that from the web UI. And of course, the source code, and that's the nice thing about open source, the source code is available online. So if you hit a wall, if you have a question, well, you can use the source look. We've been pretty good at being keeping up to date with the .NET releases and getting features in there. Our system is very easy to extend. So like when Razor came along, we were able to introduce Razor support into the system within a few weeks. Basically because of the pluggable nature of our system. You use Link whenever you query data, that is nice. Razor, WebForms, or XSLT, you can choose what you want to do for layouts. And again, this provider-based model that permeates our CMS enables you to go ahead and add new features. That could be like a new data provider in the system, new media provider. If a new technology comes along like Razor, you can hook it in like this. So all of this is free. It's available for downloads, the source code built. So the next question, how do we fund this? Well, one of the big drivers behind this is actually you guys. First of all, the marketing we have gotten from going open source, that was like one of the reasons we went from closed source to open source was because this is like a great way to get it out there where people can try it out. We've had contributions. We've had a lot of people create C1 packages, which is made available to the community. driving the roadmap, getting features, people voting on how to where we should focus on next. Quality bug reports, this is the best. I mean, there are good and there are bad bug reports, and typically when you have an open source community with developers, you tend to get good bug reports, which is super nice. And also helping out people in the forum. Of course, we also get a lot of nourishment from actual paying customers, because with 6 full-time employees, we need some money to be to flow through the system. So we do sell some commercial packages. We also, as a service, have an automated upgrade feature, which makes you enable you to like to move from one version to another continuously within a few minutes. Bug fix warranty. So if it's open source, the source code is there. You can always go fix the bugs. But perhaps if you're a company and you're running something critical, you would actually like to have an agreement with the company which will promise you to go ahead and fix any bugs. So we sell that. Partner networks, which pretty much give you access to all the other things you see on that slide. And of course, support and consulting. Also, a source of revenue for our open source work is Microsoft Azure. We sell a web role, which enables scaling both across data centers or within a single data center, where you can go ahead and use, for instance, the traffic manager to have a website served off in both Europe, America, Asia. And just 2 weeks ago, we started giving access to Composite T1 as a service on a web page. So you can go ahead and visit our website, and on the front page, type in a host name, and you actually have a website running on Azure in less than a minute. So we're commercial on top of open source in order to fund the open source work. So if you want to get involved, and I guess most of this is true for most open source projects, but like first of all, of course, use the software. Talk to us, let us know if like there is an issue. Rate us, review us, and it does not have to be 5 stars. It's very important for us to know if there is a problem out there that we're not focusing on. Feature requests, upvoting other people's feature requests, commenting on them, making sure that we like get as many eyes on ideas. Bug reports, helping people in the community, and then like always people treat people in the community with respect. This is a very nice thing. There's a lot of people here putting, you know, their heart and soul into the work, so courtesy is a good thing. If you want to be a truly awesome support, is then, you know, commit the time it takes to go ahead and translate the C1 console to your own language, contributing code to the core, creating packages, starter sites, help create events in your local area. This is also like a great, also super nice for us in the core team to see people doing this around the world. Write blogs about Composite T1. And of course, bring in customers. It's an awesome platform, and it's very good for building company websites. So if you're in that business, it's not hard to bring in customers. And if you created something cool on our platform, please share it. So let us know that you're there and what you think, and connect with us. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think, again, that's another example of how you can take an open source project and build businesses around it. I think it's also a great example of something that Bertrand pointed out at the beginning, which was, you know, when you go into open source, you have an opportunity to express your creativity, to express your point of view and the way you think about things. Just because there's another project that seems in the same general space as what you were thinking about, if you had a different way of thinking about it, you can do that in the open source world. And you can you can find other people that connect with your way of thinking and build great ideas together and kind of collaborate on those kinds of things. So I think that's just a great thing to think about is, you know, if you're thinking about entering in from the project creation side. So now, kind of a little bit of a shift of gears, I think, with Ed, right? We're also gonna continue talking about this, but I think talking about it more from the perspective of someone that is an employee of an organization like Microsoft and working and collaborating into an existing open source project that helps our own products get better. So with that, I'll turn it over to you.
Cool. Thanks, Jay. Hi, my name is Ed Thompson. I'm a software engineer at Microsoft. And today I want to talk to you about a project that's very near and dear to my heart. It's a project called libgit2sharp. libgit2sharp is a Git repository management library for .NET. We work on .NET 4.0 and newer, and Mac and Linux on Mono and 3.6 and newer. And what do I mean when I say a Git repository management library? It sounds like a lot. What we actually do is allow you to access programmatically from .NET in C# and Visual Basic and F#, and talk to your Git repository. Why might you want to do that? Let's say you're writing an IDE, and you want to be able to let users see the history of their version control from within the IDE. Maybe they right-click and say View History. You can do that with libgit2sharp. Let's say you're writing a continuous integration platform, and you want to be able to download the latest code from their repository, build it, test it. You can do that with libgit2sharp. I point those two things out specifically because those are actually two things I do with libgit2sharp. We use libgit2sharp in Visual Studio at Microsoft in order to provide Git repository management, and we use it in Team Foundation Server and Visual Studio Online in order to provide pull requests, build and test integration, all that great stuff. Okay? It's not just Microsoft using libgit2sharp, though. There's a lot of people building on top of it. Again, we use it, but also GitHub uses libgit2sharp in their GitHub for Windows product. Plastic SCM is using it. It's a great piece of code that a lot of people are using. Even more people are using the library that underlies libgit2sharp, and that's called libgit2. It's a C, native C library that does the actual repository management. libgit2sharp is built on top of it to provide a nice .NET interface. I don't want to talk too much about libgit2, although it's great too. This is the .NET showcase, not the native code on Windows open source showcase. I think that's the next session, right, Jay? Maybe next year. So like I said, libgit2sharp is great. It lets you build with C# to talk to your Git repository. If we didn't have libgit2sharp, you'd have to run the Git command line, and you'd have to screen scrape the output, parse the strings that it gives you, which is not in the most regular format, and figure out what to do with it then. That was like not cool with us when we started thinking about how we were going to put Git into Visual Studio. That was off the table. We'd have to ship Git for Windows, which brings all these Unix tools like sed and awk and a bunch of other three-letter things that I don't want to deal with. I would much rather just write some C# code. So that's what we do. You know, it also gives you a lot of power. libgit2sharp lets you do just a ton of functionality. It'll let you rewrite history, which is a pretty complex thing in Git. It's very modular. You can plug in new database backends. For example, if you wanted to store your Git repository, maybe you don't want to store it on the file system like you normally do. Maybe you want to put it in a SQL Server database or in Azure Blob Storage. libgit2sharp lets you do that. It's very powerful. Yet it's still very easy to get started. We have NuGet packages. We have all our documentation online in NuDoc. It's very quick to go ahead and get started. Okay? If you don't want to use libgit2sharp, or if you don't just want to use libgit2sharp, if you also want to work on libgit2sharp, help develop libgit2sharp, we would very much encourage you to do that. We love having new people on the project. Super easy to get started. We use a website called upforgrabs.net. If you haven't seen this, this is a great little resource that that helps you get connected to an open source project that you might want to help out with. On upforgrabs.net, there's just a list of open source projects that have you know, very easy getting started information that are committed to helping new people. And one of the things that you're expected to do then is also label your work items. So on libgit2sharp, on our project page on GitHub, we have labels for items that are quote-unquote up for grabs, that are easy, you know, bite-sized pieces that a new contributor might want to jump in with. Okay? If you do decide you want to contribute, please do note that we're very test-driven. We'd like, if you're going to contribute a new feature or a bug report, we'd like to see some unit tests. that, you know, ideally ones that fail before your change and succeed after. I think that's pretty straightforward, but it's worth calling out. It's something we do really well on the Libgit 2 Sharp project. Our testing is really solid. One of the things that that we're missing, you know, we're pretty feature complete, not 100%. We're missing rebase still, which is pretty complex. We don't have SSH support yet. We're working on those things. But one of the things that we would really love to see more of is documentation. I think this is true of most open source projects. The documentation's just never at the level that we want it to be at as developers. It also turns out that documentation is one of the easiest ways to get started with a project. You don't have to go deep into the code, but you do get to go broad in the code. So you get to learn a lot about how the code's organized. You get to learn how to interact with the other developers. You get to learn how the community works. And at the end, we've got better documentation. So you're a rock star. So if you're thinking about getting started in an open source project, not necessarily Libgit 2 Sharp, think about the documentation. Okay? I want to just real quick show how powerful and how easy it is to use Libgit 2 Sharp. Emmerich, who's the maintainer of Libgit 2 Sharp, he and I put together a little demo project for this, and we liked the idea so much that we decided to turn it into a real full-fledged product. It's a little, not product, project, perhaps, would be a better way to put it. I don't see myself making a lot of money on this one. What it does is it's a little utility that will tell you what's going on in your Git repository. Let's say somebody pushes something up to the server. This is going to show a little Windows 8 Metro Toast notification. If I go ahead and start it now, I'm not actually watching any repositories, but you can see up here in the upper right that I've got this, this notification. The idea is that I want to be notified every time somebody pushes something up to my remote repository. Okay? And since we like this so much, we actually got started and it started getting kind of complex and started getting kind of powerful, which was great. So what I've done is I've taken all of that code out, and I'm going to go ahead and just show how easy it is to talk to a Git repository. Okay? First, I'm just going to create a new repository on disk. Sorry, open up an existing repository on disk. And so this is, like I said, you get nice C# .NET objects just like you'd expect. You don't have to worry about the fact that this is Libgit 2, which is native code under the hood. You don't have to worry about talking to a Git command line. And what I'm going to do now, how many people are using Git right now? Great. So for those of you who don't use Git, what I'm doing is I'm actually just going to go ahead and fetch the information of the changes from the server. I'm not actually, you know, merging it into my workspace. I'm not making any changes locally. I'm just grabbing the information from what's called my origin server. That's where I cloned from. And I've got a nice way to get at my head commit, which is my local, the local commit that I'm on. And once I've fetched that, I can look at, you'll excuse the name, that's Git terminology. It's kind of funny. Remote's origin master means where the server is. It's kind of a funny way to say it, but it is saying it nonetheless. And once I've gotten that information, it's really easy for me to query the commits in my repository. And I can, in fact, query by a certain set of filters. I want to look at commits since what's on the between what's on the remote and what's on my local. Okay, so now I've got a list of commits. I've got a list of commits that exist on the server that don't yet exist locally. And that's what I want. That's what I want to notify. These are things that have been pushed up to the server that I don't yet have. So those commits, I'm going to go ahead and copy the boilerplate. That's all this project really is. It's just a notification system, an event loop and a notification system. So I'm going to copy that boilerplate right here. I'm going to fill in the committer's information. And the commit message. Now, hopefully, when I start this up, I haven't actually made any build errors and it actually runs. You never know with a live demo. So now what's going on is this is actually pulling my remote repository, seeing what's changed. So if I pop over to that, luckily GitHub lets me go ahead and make changes on their website, so this is super easy. Pardon the small font. So now I've committed that. In the background, my process should actually be pulling, and you note that it is. In fact, I got a little Windows 8 toast notification as soon as that commit showed up on the server. So that was 5 minutes and a dozen lines of code. Super simple to open up a local repository, connect to a remote repository, and actually do some inspection of the contents. Okay. So, I hope that you know this has inspired you to think about your process and how you work with your version control and maybe find a little need that needs fixing and go fix it with libgit2sharp. If you're interested, libgit2sharp's on GitHub. If you think you might actually want this little demo app that we decided was so useful, it's also on GitHub. It's called Radar. And if you're interested in libgit2sharp, you can follow us on Twitter. If you have questions about using it, you can see us on Stack Overflow. Again, we use libgit2sharp here at Microsoft. We use it in Visual Studio and Team Foundation Server. If that's something you're interested in knowing more about, tomorrow, 8:30 in the morning, I know it's early, but I think it'll be really rewarding. I'll be talking about that. If you don't want to get up so early, I'll also be at the Tech Expo at the DevTools booth right afterwards. So thanks so much for your time. Really appreciate it. I'm going to turn it back over to Jay.
Thank you. Again, I think that's just another example of sort of thinking about how you can incorporate and think about leveraging open source as part of your software projects, whether they're internally developed applications or commercial applications like we do at Microsoft. So it's a thing. It's a trend that we know. We hear a lot when we go out and talk to customers that in the ever-changing landscape of what we're being asked to do as software developers, mobile, embedded, all those kinds of things, the time to market is really influenced by how quickly you can go build your solution and how quickly you can build upon the work of others. And so thinking about the strategy for how you incorporate open source in your development is important. I think it's a great example of how we at Microsoft were able to leverage open source to get a product into market very quickly. Now, I want to turn it over to Scott for our last showcase here, and have Scott talk about it from the other perspective of kind of a broader view of how we at Microsoft, and specifically in the developer division and developer tools group, are thinking about open source and our engagement with the open source world. So, Scott.
Thank you. So I'm Scott Hunter, and I work on the ASP.NET team at Microsoft. And we've been in the open source space for a while. Kind of fun seeing Bertrand here because he was actually on the team when we first started this back in 2008. Just to get some background, in 2008, we started looking at the web. And if you look at the web, it's full of open source technologies, whether it be Apache, whether it be PHP, whether it be Ruby on Rails. All of these web frameworks were open source. And so we started having the thought of, if we want to really play in the space, we need to be open source as well. And so we took a bunch of baby steps over time. So starting in 2008, we released the source code for ASP.NET MVC. And we actually released it under a license. It was we weren't taking contributions. So the kind of term you hear in open source for this is we were source only, I guess. We did have a license that did allow you to do whatever you wanted with the software, though. You could actually take the source code and build it and do whatever you wanted, and even make your own product. It was fully open. But we did not take any contributions back. Then, as we started looking at software, we're like, if you're building web applications, you use a lot of libraries, things like jQuery, And we started saying, hey, we want to ship these libraries in the box. We heard interesting things from customers at that time as well. We had heard customers that said, oh, I'd love to use jQuery, but I can't because it doesn't, you know, it doesn't come with Visual Studio. And so we started taking the most popular JavaScript libraries that we ran into and shipping them as part of Visual Studio. So in 2008, we also started shipping jQuery with ASP.NET. And this was interesting as well. This is part of our journey towards open sourcing. We were, at that time, we actually were working with the jQuery team on some extensions to jQuery. We worked on quite a few of those things. Bertrand was out there on a bunch of the committees working on Ajax at that time. And we were just kind of learning how the open source space works. And then the next big step kind of came for us in 2010 when we released NuGet. And the idea was, can we create an ecosystem for .NET where .NET developers using Visual Studio can easily go and consume and find open source libraries? And today we get millions of downloads a day of packages from the NuGet gallery that contain a ton of open source projects, including all of our projects. And then, to me, the most exciting thing was in 2012, we basically open sourced all of ASP.NET that was not in the core .NET framework. That was MVC, Web API, SignalR, Razor, Entity Framework, and these were all released for the first time under open source licenses where we were taking contributions from the community. So, and this also marked a massive change in how we actually work. All of these projects that are open source, not only are they open sourced, but we actually, as Microsoft, developed them live in the community. So these projects are on aspnetwebstack.codeplex.com. And if you go to that website, there's also entityframework.codeplex.com. If you go to that website, you can actually download the source code for this. You can see the bugs live in this. You can see the commits from our developers on a daily basis on these projects. We develop completely in the public. There's nothing held back from us. On those same websites, we also now have our roadmaps for these projects. So you can go to these sites, look at the roadmap for the project, you can give feedback on the roadmap for that project, and we'll potentially, you know, alter the direction of that product. The way it kind of works from an open source perspective is, when we first were starting to do this, people came to me and they're like, oh, aren't you worried that it's going to be a free-for-all and people are going to submit all these weird changes to our products? And kind of the rules that we have are basically, you need to map to our roadmap. So as long as your whatever your contribution is, if it maps along to the themes of our roadmap, or you get us to convince us to change in the community to change the roadmap, we can change the roadmap to accommodate. The next thing is, people used to ask me, it's like, well, aren't you afraid of this code? Well, we review the code internally just like we review any other developer inside of Microsoft. If you're actually inside of Microsoft working on one of these products, somebody reviews your code. Just like for any open source commit, somebody's going to review your code, and if we don't think the code meets the standards that are outlined on the website, then we'll send it back and say, hey, it needs to have more unit tests, or hey, this is the way we format our code in Microsoft, and you need to format along with the rest of the source code. And so this marked a change. And then in 2014, we started working on the next version of ASP.NET. And these other projects were awesome because we open sourced them, but we open sourced them after they were actually a couple years old. And so another thing that I hear in open source and .NET especially is, God, there's not as much community contributions on these projects. And part of the reason I think you see some of that is because a lot of these projects, by the time we open source them, are pretty mature, and they don't have needs of lots of changes or whatnot. So when we started working on the next version of ASP.NET, it was really fun because we actually opened the source code repository about 2 months after we started. Basically, once you could actually build it enough to not just be a pile of crashing code. And so we open sourced this early in 2014. Now, what's cool is if I look at this thing, when I was building this slide, I wanted to go look and see how many contributions have we taken in the last year, year and a half or so. And I'm actually pretty happy. So first off, the vNext stuff, which open sourced just a few months ago, has already taken 115 commits by 23 authors. We've got 47 commits by 27 authors on the ASP.NET web stack. That's the more mature stuff. SignalR, which actually started completely open source. SignalR was a project that two guys on my team started as a demo at TechEd North America 2 years ago. It's got 133 commits by 46 authors. And then looking at Entity Framework, this is a complicated ORM, and we've taken 92 commits by 20 authors in the last year or so on that framework. The amazing thing is one of the commits on that framework was a performance improvement of about 600% on some really complicated queries. And we've had people at Microsoft Research working on improving the performance of some of the query stuff in Entity Framework, and somebody in the community figured it out and did it. When we shipped Visual Studio 2013 last year, two of the biggest features in MVC, two of the only real features in MVC, were attribute routing and cores. And cores is actually in Web API. But these features were written entirely by the community. And they were fun. We actually partnered with these people. They actually brought their code, and we helped them bring it up to spec. And it's fun being able to bring these features into ASP.NET. The next thing is, as I start working on the next framework, we had a whole bunch of goals. One of the goals was to be modular, meaning that you can use just what parts of the framework you wanted. We want to make it easier to move to the cloud. We want to make development faster. We want to let you use your tools. But you might notice there's cross-platform is this one of these items that we have down here. And so not only do we want to be open source, but we want to be cross-platform. This brought a bunch of other challenges where we got to go out and play with the community around Mono, which is a open source version of .NET that is out there. And I'm going to do a quick demo and show you what we did with this. I am number 5. So this is I'm just on a Mac here, Apple logo. And on this Mac, I've got a folder here. And I will just clear this out. I can type. And I've got source code for an ASP.NET MVC project. And if I just type K Kestrel, this will launch a web server that we wrote on .NET that runs on all platforms. And I can bring my browser up here. And I'm running .NET on a Mac on Mono. So not only have we taken .NET, which runs on Windows only at the time, and ASP.NET, which runs Windows only at the time, and made it open source, but we've worked with the community to actually make it work on Mono so it runs everywhere. And I'm super excited about that. The community then stepped up, and we're like, okay, we've got ASP.NET running on Mono, which is cool. And then the community stepped up, and we need some way to actually edit these apps in an editor. And so I've got Sublime Text here. And you might notice that there's full colorization. I can do builds from in here. And I get warnings and errors. If I actually press F4 on my Mac, it'll actually take the cursor to the next error. And you actually have a reasonable development experience here. The cool thing is most of these extensions were written by the community. We didn't write these things. Once we had an ASP.NET that ran on Mono and ran on Mac and Linux, the community stepped up and helped build these things. There's actually even some IntelliSense in here. But I can show there's a few more things here. I can come here. I can type K. There's run K commands. K is the internal code name for ASP.NET vNext. And you can see right from in Sublime, I can launch the web server. I can tell it to do a build. I can do a pack, which basically takes my app and builds it up into a NuGet package for deployment, all within open source tools. And so it's been great not only open sourcing ASP.NET, but having the community embrace us and getting us to run better on these other platforms. So with that, I'll give it back to you, Jay.
Thank you, Scott. Of course, there's where the ASP.NET stuff lives. And more of Scott's slides for you. So, you know, I think one of the things with that, we'll kind of wrap it up, but I do want to encourage folks, if you want to get kind of engaged and you're a .NET developer, you mentioned that, you know, the .NET Foundation is there. It's still relatively young, but it is a place where you can go and start getting involved. There are a number of projects that are already part of the foundation that are on our project list, and we have more joining kind of over the weeks. We've got over 50 projects that have contacted us since Build, interested in participating and coming into the foundation. If you want to get involved in open source, you know, more from a contribution point of view, you want to engage in working with these, let us know and we'll help you figure out, you know, what projects maybe exist that are a good match for your skill set. If you have an idea that you want to get started as a new project, we're developing a advisory council that will engage with you and help you answer some of the common questions you may have about how do I get started with a new project, you know, those kind of things. So that's where actually in the, you know, in the news area here, one of the things we just recently put out a couple weeks ago was sort of a call for feedback around this advisory council plan. So if you're interested in getting involved from that standpoint, this will be a group of folks outside the foundation that will represent the open source community and give feedback into the foundation. They'll also take on activities of the foundation, such as helping projects kind of get onboarded or get started and so forth. So with that, I hope this was a useful session for you. I hope it was interesting. Let me switch over to the obligatory slides here at the end so we don't get in trouble. Please definitely submit feedback. Let us know kind of how the session worked for you, feedback for how we can make it better in the future, what you'd like to see. We've got some time. Given the size of the room, what I'd suggest is actually if you have questions, I'm sure these guys will all be happy to take them. We kind of can hang out up here. But rather than trying to go do a crazy roundabout with the mic, just feel free to come on up. And with that, I hope you're enjoying your week here at Tech Ed. Enjoy the rest of the week, and thanks for spending time with us.